I've been doing some corresponding with Adam Hsu in New Delhi, as I told you before, and he asked me to put some thoughts together on Abraham's two seeds. And as I was putting those thoughts together this week and spending time helping to him to understand my thoughts on Adam's or on Abraham's seed, I thought, why not take the lessons that I'm putting together and present them on this morning? And that's what I believe the Lord would have me to do. And so I want to read from a passage in Hebrews 11 to begin with, and then pick up in our notes on the in our notes in Hebrews 11 and in verse 12. It says, Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. I take this as being two seeds, a heavenly seed and an earthly seed. Stars being in the heavens, sand being on the earth. Abraham had two seeds. The way that we can grasp the significance of these truths is from the Old Testament, because these are using physical illustrations to help us to understand about Abraham's seed. We have to go back in the Old Testament to find out what that means. In Romans 15:4, it says, whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. The things that were written aforetime is the Old Testament. God wrote them for a purpose, and that purpose was to help us to learn some things. Not only that, He wanted us to endure. We look at the troubles of the children of God in the Old Testament, and they had to endure. I just think about Joshua and Caleb. They had to endure. They endured the 40 years in the wilderness, and then they endured all the way through the war in the land of Canaan. But anyway, we need to endure. And it's the word comfort is really not a good word. Comfort is too soft. It's paraklesis. It means to exhort. The Old Testament was written to exhort us, to encourage us, to prod us, that we might have hope, and actually might esteem hope. It could be translated esteem or regard, because the Old Testament is filled with hope, hope of something better. And so we see that Abraham had two seeds. And again, I read again in Hebrews 11:12. Therefore sprang seed, that is, there even of one, that is Abraham. This is referring to Abraham. And him as good as dead. He was well past time of bearing children. So many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. When I think of stars, I think of heavenly. When I think of sand, I think of earthly. In Genesis chapter 16, verse 15, we see Abraham's first son, Ishmael. And Hagar bare Abram a son. And Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. So Abraham had a son named Ishmael. Now this son is not the blessed son as Isaac when that Sarah bare. And we'll see that in verse 21. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. So here we see Abraham had a second son. In Galatians chapter 4, We see the Lord referring to, through Paul, to these two sons. For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Then in verse 42, or 24, it says that these two sons are an allegory. In other words, God used the birth of these two sons to teach us something by another story. Which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants, two testaments. That is the Old Testament and the New Testament. One from Mount Sinai, this is the Old Testament, and law, which gendereth the bondage, which is Hagar. When you think about the Old Testament, I think of the Old Testament, the ceremonial law. Let me say this, the moral law, which is also included in that, that God gave Moses, does not bring bondage. The moral law brings freedom. Because if you obey the moral law, then you have no restrictions. The speed limit's 30. You drive 30 or 25 or 15. You have all kinds of freedom to obey the law. Same way with the moral law. But anyway, the Old Testament and Mount Sinai has to do with the Mosaic law, and that brings bondage. Then in verse 25 it says, "For Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and answers to Jerusalem, which now is." That's on earth. It's in Judah. "And is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free." The Jerusalem which is above is New Testament. New Testament speaks of a different inheritance, a heavenly inheritance. And so there is the distinction. Ishmael, earthly; Isaac, heavenly. And the word free has to do with great faith and grace. It provides us with freedom. In Genesis 21:10, we see the significance of types, these two types. "The son of the bondwoman shall not be joint heirs with my son." I put in joint, it's not there, but that's what it means. That Ishmael and Isaac will not have the same inheritance. In fact, Ishmael was sent away from Isaac, and Ishmael's inheritance was a bottle of water and a loaf of bread, where Isaac got all of Abraham's wealth. I mean, that's the distinction between the Jerusalem, the earthly inheritance, and the heavenly inheritance in comparison. bottle of water and a loaf of bread does not compare with the wealth of Abraham. Flocks, gold, silver, servants. Now the significance of types, I believe, are found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 6. "Now these things were our examples, or types, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted." Now I put some comments in this verse. The things that is referred to in this verse are the experiences and the judgments of the nation of Israel. That's the things that are being referred to in this verse. And it says these things are our types or examples. Ours is a reference to Paul, who's writing this, and to the called and the saints at Corinth. You find this in chapter 1. "To the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they." The reference to "they" is a reference to the fathers in 10:1. "Also lusted." And because it was the fathers that came out of the nation of Israel. I mean, came out of Egypt along with the children. Now all these things happen in verse 11. It says, now all these things happen unto them, the fathers, for in samples or types, and they are written for our, Paul and the called and the saints, admonition. The word admonition is an interesting word. It's a compound Greek word. And it can carry the thought, and it has other translations, but it can carry the thought of understanding purposes. It's compound, understand, and purpose. So types are given to help us to understand the plans and the purposes that God has for His children. And it says, upon us, upon whom the ends of the ages are come. The word world is the Greek word aion, which is the word age, and it's plural. Now, if they were consistent, they would say the end of the worlds, plural, but they didn't. They were inconsistent in translation, unfortunately. So it's the end of the ages. You know what? We're living at the end of the ages. I see in the Bible 6 or 7 ages. We're living in the sixth day, the 6,000th year, the sixth age. There's coming an age which is the millennial age. It's the seventh day. And we're living in the sixth day. And by the way, the sixth day is the day of preparation. Remember when the children of Israel were collecting manna? On the sixth day, they were allowed to collect what? A double portion of manna. And what is manna? It's Scripture. It's a type or a picture of Scripture. And we're living in a day when God's giving out a double portion of His truth. And these types are coming to light in these days more so than any other age. The significance of what happened to the nation of Israel. Now there's a reference to the word them in this passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Them or they is a reference to the fathers. In Judges 2:7, and the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua and had seen all the great works of the Lord that He did for Israel. Now, I'm including this verse to help you to see how far types extend. From the time the children of Israel left Egypt all the way through the whole book of Joshua. God is showing pictures and types to encourage us to endure, to exhort us, to esteem the hope. What hope? The hope of glory. Christ in us, the hope of glory. So these types extend all the way into the book of Joshua. Now I'm not saying that there are not other types in the Old Testament, but I'm just showing you the extent of these types that Paul was referring to in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Now the two groups were baptized unto Moses. In Exodus 3:22, it says, but every woman, and this is a parent, shall borrow of her neighbor and of her that sojourned in her house jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment, and ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters. The sons and daughters in this case are those that are 19 years old and younger. This is a special group within the nation of Israel. It's called the sons and daughters. And they're the ones who have been given jewels of silver, gold, and raiment. And you'll find in Genesis chapter 24, verse 53, a type of the bride of Christ, Rebekah, who married Isaac, a type of Christ. And the servant brought forth jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment and gave them to Rebekah. So the sons and daughters had the same thing, the same blessings that Rebekah had. And then in verse 1 of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea." I believe the fathers were all saved and all passed through the Red Sea and all into the cloud, as well as the children as well. They were a total group of those who I believe represents those that are saved. Now, they were called unto a land flowing with milk and honey. In Leviticus chapter 20, verse 24, "Ye shall inherit their land, and I will give it you to possess it, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am the Lord your God, which have separated you from other people." Now, this land of flowing with milk and honey in Exodus 15:17 is an inheritance in His mountain, in the Lord's mountain. So it's a heavenly inheritance. "Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance." His inheritance is a heavenly inheritance. The land flowing with milk and honey is a heavenly inheritance in type or in picture. Now, in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 15, we see Moses addressing a certain group of people. "Only the Lord hath delighted in thy fathers to love them." So we see that the Lord loved the fathers that came out of the land of Egypt. And He delighted in them. He actually took care of them when they were out there complaining. Food, clothing, and shelter. 40 years. No work. Just simply go out and get it, eat it. Shoes didn't wear out. Can you imagine having the same pair of shoes for 40 years? Now that just wouldn't work in some houses that have wives in them. You gotta have a few pair of shoes. Well, anyway, I think that's okay. I think they need that. But anyway, 40 years, same pair of shoes. But it says here, "And He chose their seed after them." What was their seed after them? The sons and daughters. That's who He chose. Just like Rebekah is elect, the bride. "Even you above all people," the sons and daughters were chosen above and beyond the fathers. In Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 22, the same chapter, Moses is addressing them that are there, and he is not addressing the fathers. Did you know that? They had all died. He's only talking to the sons and daughters. "Thy fathers went down into Egypt with 70 persons, and now the Lord thy God hath made thee as the stars of heaven for multitude." Who is that? The sons and daughters. I think what I want to do, because I didn't put it in the notes, is I want to read to you from Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 3. So that you can see that he is speaking to only the sons and daughters. The fathers are gone. In verse 3 it says, "It came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spake unto the children of Israel according to all that the Lord had given him in commandment unto them." 40th year means that the children of Israel, the fathers, were gone. They had expired. Okay? Now, he made them as the stars of heaven. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 16, "And now they," that is, those that are living by faith, in Hebrews 11, "desire a better country," that is, in heavenly. The word "desire" is a little stronger. It's covet. After. It's in the present tense. It's not an event. They were wanting that, and they were still wanting that, and they wanted it some more. And it's in the middle voice. You know what the middle voice is telling us in the Greek? For myself. That's what it's saying. They wanted it for whom? For themselves. They wanted a better country. The word country, by the way, is in italics. So therefore it's been added. And it's better than an earthly because it's a heavenly. That is an heavenly country. And the word heavenly, by the way, is an adjective. It's describing the place they wanted. Therefore, God was not ashamed to be called their God, for He hath prepared for them a city. And this city is a heavenly city. It's the heavenly Jerusalem. And it's very interesting, we were talking about this in Sunday school, that the New Jerusalem is 1,500 miles square. 1,500 mile city would not fit in the Mideast. It would extend somewhere from India to the Mediterranean Sea, maybe even beyond. But anyway, the New Jerusalem will only come down. It doesn't land. It's a heavenly city. Now, the heavenly city is referred to in Hebrews 12:22. But ye are come unto Mount Zion, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and unto an innumerable company of angels. This is where the angels are today, and this is the city that Abraham's seed desired, coveted, and because they did, and they were pilgrims and sojourners here on the earth. In other words, they weren't looking for anything here on the earth. They were looking things in the heaven. God was not ashamed of them. Now, in Hebrews 11, verse 8, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place that he should afterward receive for an inheritance, he obeyed. And he went out. In Genesis chapter 13, verses 15 and 16, this is after Abraham had gone down into Egypt and got kicked out. And he separated himself from Lot, who was a drag. And it says in verse 15, God revealed to him further truth. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. And you cannot number dust. You have a hard time seeing it. I picked up a little dust this morning and put it in the garbage, and that dust is all collected in a little wad called dust bunnies. I didn't count them. Anyway, as somebody said, you know, we go back to dust, and the little girl said, Mama, I see some dust under the bed. Are they coming or going? Because God made us out of the dust of the earth. Anyway, so he, I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. So Abraham, he took Abraham from an earthly illustration, example about his inheritance, and then in chapter 15, he moves Abraham beyond that to a heavenly inheritance. In Genesis 15:5, it says, and he brought him forth abroad, in other words, the land, and he said, now look toward heaven, and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be, that is, as the stars. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. This righteousness here is the righteousness which is of faith. And that is not when Abraham got saved. Abraham had been saved and walking with God, not very faithfully, for many years. I'd say probably 20 years by this time, maybe less. But anyway, Abraham did not get saved in Genesis 15. Then in Genesis chapter 22, we see that his seed was told something about their future. That in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore. Now I want you to get the next phrase. And thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. Now the word possess, from Brown, Driver, and Briggs, says to inherit, can be translated inherit. It can be also translated to take possession by force. Thy seed will inherit the gates of your enemy, and you're going to take it by force. And notice here, the seat or the gate is a seat of authority. That's where governments transacted business for the nation or for the empire. And the word his is not a very does not reflect the fact that it's plural. The Hebrew, this word is plural in the Hebrew, and so therefore it would be translated their enemies. Their the plural implies, in my judgment, the stars and the sand. They will possess the earthly gates of the enemy, of their enemies. They will possess the heavenly gates of their enemies, and they will take it by force. And we know that's true because of Ephesians 6:12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. You see the word high? It's not a good translation. It's heavenlies. In heavenly places. So we are fighting for the gates of our heavenly enemies, and their gates are in the heavens, not here on the earth. Now, in Hebrews 11:12, he affirmed again his seed. Therefore, in other words, what I'm saying is he used this same illustration in the Old Testament, and he affirms it in the New Testament. It's used twice. And I think that when you see things twice, it's for emphasis. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is upon the seashore innumerable. Now, the word multitude does not mean an innumerable number. The word multitude can be translated bundle. And a bundle can be counted. The innumerable is uncountable. You cannot count sand. Have you ever tried to go down the seashore and count sand? Can't do it. It's futile. You can count the stars that you can see in the heavens. Maybe not all of them, because you don't have enough time. And you kind of get sleepy when you're laying out there looking at the stars. But anyway, stars are countable. And here's why. This is what I mean. The word multitude is found in Acts chapter 28, verse 3. And when Paul gathered a bundle of sticks, he laid them on the fire. The word bundle and the word multitude in Hebrews 11:12 are the same Greek word. And so therefore, Paul was able to collect a bundle of sticks. And you can count how many sticks he picked up. Obviously, he did not pick up an innumerable amount of sticks, because he picked them up in his hands. Now, if he picked them up in his arms, you may have an argument. No, that's not true. Anyway, an innumerable. And he I know this, that when he threw him in the fire, a viper got his hand. Now, he may have got him in his arm. So I can't prove that. But I just want to cover my bases there. I don't want to say something I shouldn't. Now, in Psalms 147 verse 4, the Lord tells us that stars have names and they have a number. And He telleth the number of the stars, and He calleth them all by their names. So stars have names and they are numbered. And let me say this, if you want to send them a small fee, you can have one of those stars named after you. So they have those stars numbered and they know where they are and they just have a number. Now if you want to have one of those stars that only has a number with your name on it, you pay them and they'll put it down on a piece of paper saying that that's your star. Got your name on it. Now, Paul was looking for a heavenly kingdom. And Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 4 verse 18, "And the Lord shall deliver me from every evil work." The Lord will deliver him from his enemies. His what enemies? His heavenly enemies. Because we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. We wrestle against principalities and powers and rulers in heavenly places. "And the Lord will preserve me unto," or for, "His heavenly kingdom." And the word heaven, heavenly, is an adjective modifying the word kingdom. In other words, Paul believed God would preserve him for a heavenly kingdom, not an earthly kingdom. Now, in Numbers chapter 14, verse 29 through 30, it says, your, and its fathers is implied, carcasses shall fall after 40 years in the wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward. This is what I was talking about a while ago. It's 20 years old and upward that are considered the fathers. They're the ones who died in the wilderness, which ye have murmured against me, and doubtless ye shall not come into the land. In other words, they did not enter into the land flowing with milk and honey, which is the mountain of God's inheritance, which is a type of a heavenly inheritance. It's not the land that we inherit, it's what the land produces or provides. The land flowing with milk and honey provided wells and vineyards and houses and food, and it's what's if I'm going to have and these houses, the houses they didn't have to build. These are wells they didn't have to dig. You know, I could own a piece of property here in northeast Minneapolis, and what good is it? Well, it's a drag because I have to pay taxes on it. But if I had a house on it, man, that'd be good. If I had a vineyard on it or some fruit trees like the Waggies have got, that's an even extra blessing. Right? And we've gotten a few blessings out of their garden. And we thank the Lord for them for that. But anyway, so it's not the geography, it's the blessings of the geography that we enjoy. Then in Numbers chapter 14, verse 31, continuing, "But your little ones," that is 19 and under, "your little ones," and in the Septuagint, that's the Paideans, "which he said would be prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land," which is really a better inheritance. And by the way, it's the Paideans that enter the kingdom. Except you become as little children, Paideans, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. And so therefore, God chose the little ones, the Paideans, to enter the land. And they were the stars of the heavens. And in Hebrews chapter 2, reference is made to the Paideans in verse 13. And 14, "And again I will put my trust in him." This is the Lord speaking about the Father. "And again, behold, I and the children, the Paideans, the little children, which God hath given me, for as much then as the children," the Paideans are partakers of flesh and blood, "he also himself likewise took part of the same." Jesus Christ took part of the same flesh and blood. That's not to say that he didn't take part of the flesh and blood so that he could minister to the rest of the world. Okay, it's not that. His body of flesh and blood and bones hung on the cross for the sins of the whole world. But he is focusing on a smaller group of people called the Paideans, the ones who enter the kingdom of heaven. And he, because they had flesh and blood, he also likewise took part of the same, that through the death, and we have studied this in depth and in length, this death has the definite article "the" before it, and it is a reference to the death of his soul in the Garden of Gethsemane. I am persuaded of that. "That he might destroy him that hath power of death," that is the devil. And the word "destroy" can be translated cumber, hamper, or hinder. Devil is not destroyed today. He is alive and well. And he is seeking to cause you and I, who have a desire to rule and reign with Christ in his coming kingdom, to miss it. To not enter into it. To get you to live in sin that would disqualify you from ruling and reigning. He has the power of death, the death. But you know what? I'm so thankful the Lord kind of squelched that to some degree. Not totally, because he's still working, and he can cause you to sin and to stray and to be deceived. And that's the reason why it's so important to read your Bible and to study and to be encouraged. He hath the power of death to cause us to perish. Just like the children of Israel, the fathers, perished and didn't enter into the land, in type, the kingdom of heaven. And then in verse 16 is interesting and I think significant. He tells us what seed he took. The seed that Christ took was the seed of Abraham. And I don't think it was an earthly seed. It was a heavenly seed, because Jesus Christ is in the heavenlies on the throne of his Father, and one day he will rule and reign over the earth. So I hope this will help us to appreciate the type and the seeds of Abraham and the significance of that type in our life. You know what? This should give us hope, a living hope. Through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, for an inheritance undefiled and that fadeth not away, reserved for you where? Where is this inheritance reserved for us? In the heavenlies, in heaven. And may we not abandon the faith or the hope. Father, I just pray that you'd bless these thoughts to your honor and glory and our good and profit. And we just pray that you'd help us to continue to pursue the mark of the prize of the high calling, the above calling, the heavenly calling, that we might win the prize. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.